Now listen. I need you to walk in my shoes for half an hour, 45 minutes. The first step, if you're going to walk in my shoes, everybody won't be able to do this, but the first step I want you to take, everyone who's here with a baseball cap, if you're going to walk in my shoes, turn your hat around. Come on, turn it around. Yeah. I'm going to ask God to turn our hearts just as we turn our hats. You see, cool people wear hats like this. Most of you, all of your lives, you walked around with your hat like this. Because you're comfortable with people who wear their hats like this. But I want you to wear your hat like this. That's sort of like what God began to say to me years ago. When he made it very, very clear to me that one of his callings on my life, one of the reasons I was born, one of the reasons why I caught so much hell in life, one of the reasons why I struggled and went through so much pain and difficulty, one of the reasons I've had so many challenges in my life was that God wanted me to live in a world to wear someone else's shoes, to live in such pain, to live with difficulties and struggles, so that I would know what it's like to live in a family, to live in a community, to be in a marriage, to be in a church, where every single day of your life, the wall gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I remember at a very early age, my father's a preacher, he's a pastor, and at a very early age, I built a wall because he was never at home. He never spent time with me. And I decided that I wouldn't care, that I would become callous, I would become hard, and I would not need him. Down deep inside, I was angry and bitter, and so I allowed that wall to build. Early in life, I was sexually abused. And out of resentment and anger, I built a wall against women. Wall against my family, wall against women, wall against other people. And then when the 60s hit, when I discovered what white folks had done to black folks, slavery, when it dawned on me that on Sunday morning in America, at 11 o'clock, it's the most segregated, racist hour of the week. I became angry and bitter and mad at white folks. I couldn't understand how God could say that he loved me and cared for me, and he would give me an old man that rejected me and not spend time with me. He put me in his large family. He allowed me to be abused, and he allowed a race of people to mistreat my people. And I was angry and mad and militant in the 60s, and I wanted so bad to kill white folks for Jesus. God allowed me to live through that, work through that. He allowed me actually, literally, for years to build walls. And I was very good at building walls. And then all of a sudden, he kind of body slammed me and said, Haman, now it's time to bust the wall. And I want to talk to you in the next few minutes. I want to talk to you in the next few minutes because I would venture to say that most of you sitting in here have never wore your hats like this. And that's no surprise because you've never busted a wall either. Look at your neighbor and say, it's time to bust a wall. It's Some of you have education and degrees, and you've got jobs and families, and you've achieved a lot of accomplishments and a lot of success. But you don't know what it's like. You have not lived. You have missed out on the feeling, the rush, the thrill, the excitement when you bust down a wall. I mean, it's good stuff. I'm talking about when the wall is big and thick. It makes no difference whether you built it or I begin to discover that God's will on my life, that He had taught me, He was teaching me, He was raising me and growing me to bust the wall. And I just thank God. I just get all fired up every time I see a wall, because I was born to bust the wall. Brothers, it's time to bust a wall. Now, for you theologians, it's found in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18. I'll have to dip in both cultures during this presentation. The biblical basis, the theological foundation for this premise, for this idea, for this calling. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18, all this is from God, who reconciled us to himself. That reconciliation, that's like a theological word. You know what I mean? He says, God reconciled us to himself through Christ, and listen to this, and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That's a nice theological promise keeper word. But in my hood, when you talk about reconciliation, you're talking about busting a wall. Okay? And so, you've heard the reconciliation thing, now it's time to what? That's what I'm saying. Now, listen, some of you old guys, you've been around a long time. You've never seen the righteous forsaking or his seed begging bread. You've been to places where Billy Graham is preaching. You've seen movements in your denomination, in your group, in your churches, had great Sunday schools and big Asian Bible schools, and you've sent money and missionaries to Africa and China. But listen, I gotta believe that the reason you're still breathing, the reason you're still alive, is because God wants to give you the opportunity to see that wall come down in your lifetime. That's why you're still breathing. That's why you're alive. That's why you're here this weekend, because it's time to bust down a wall. Something though. You gotta understand something. This wall of racism, partiality, prejudice, it was in my life, it was in my heart, it was growing, it was thicker than the wall of China. I could stand up and sing and praise God, but down deep inside, I hated people in authority, I hated my parents, I hated women, I hated white folks. And that wall on the inside was growing bigger and bigger every day. So like the time old man took me to the circus, and the thing I really liked about this trip is that he took me up to this balloon man. It was a statue of a balloon. It was like this balloon that was in the shape and the figure of a man. My old man took me over and he says, "Hey man, punch that balloon. Punch that man." I love that. My old man ain't never given me permission to punch anybody. I punched that balloon, man. Every time I would hit it, it would flop down and get back up. He said, "Hit it hard." I'd hit that balloon. It was about this tall. I'd hit it. It flop down. It come back up. He says, "Kick it." I kicked it. It fall down. It come back up. He says, "Hey, man, why do you think that balloon keeps coming back up? Why is it every time you knock it down, every time you hit it, it keeps coming back up?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "But it's got to have something to do with what's on the inside." You see, we can have affirmative action, we can have legal laws, we can have, you name it, the government and everybody else can try to force you to do something, and racism will kind of fall down, and in a few days it's coming back up. Because until you deal with what's on the inside, that's the wall. I'm talking about in the next half an hour or 45 minutes. That's the wall we gotta bust down. Paul calls it the ministry of reconciliation. I call it busting a wall. You see, there's a time to build and a time to break down. You need to understand, gentlemen, you need to understand, men, and particularly I want to talk just for a few minutes to you young folks, you younger teenagers. The truth is, some of your fathers and grandfathers don't love God enough. They don't have the guts and the courage to bust down the wall. So don't expect them to lead the way. You may be here today and you're like David. When David came in the camp and he saw Goliath talking this stuff, talking this yank, talking about God, defying God. Probably had a bow tie on. David comes in and David says, "What's up with this? How in the world are you allowing this giant of racism and partiality? How are you allowing this to live in the hood, in the community, in the church, in your family?" And all the men in Israel had no guts. They had no backbone. They had Bibles. They had conferences. They had tapes. They had Christian television. But they had no courage. They had no love. They had no guts. David comes into town. He was from a different hood. He had a different flavor. He had a different attitude. He comes in and everybody's telling him why it can't happen. It's never been done. This is the way it's always been. Do you see how big Goliath is? Do you know how long we've been racist and partial? Don't you know that we can't do this? The government has tried and it can't be done. David says, "I ain't listening to that." David says, "Listen, you're not talking to my old man Jesse. He's a great successful man, but he's never busted a wall. And you're not talking to my brothers, even though they're in the military, and they put on this uniform and say for God and for country, but they're just as weak-minded, they're just as spineless as every other man in Israel." But David says, "Listen, I want you to know that as soon as I get 5 stones, I'm taking this giant out." They did this little research. They did this little study. The professors and the scholars said, "David, we've researched racism. We know how big it is, man. It's been here since the country started, man. We don't expect things to change until Jesus comes." They said, "David, coach, it can't be done. It's too big. It's too big. Goliath is too big to fight." David says, "No, he's too big to miss. I gotta take him out." You see, if you're gonna bust the wall, men, if you're gonna bust the wall, if you're gonna bust the wall in your lifetime, I'm not impressed. God is not impressed with how many conferences and how much you tithe, this, that, and the other. You want to put a smile on God's face in your lifetime, you bust the wall. There are three requirements. There are three things that you got to have inside if you're going to bust the wall. Now, your wall may not be real big, but the guys next to you, your pastor, there's no question about it. The reason he's never preached on this, he's never talked about this, the reason why you don't have any white friends or black friends or brown friends or Asian friends is because we've allowed this giant to live in the land. We've allowed this junk to fester and grow inside. And so I'm not here just to blame people and talk about the problem. I'm here to recruit you and challenge you to help me to bust down every doggone wall we find. But here's what you got. Here's what it takes, gentlemen. Here's what it takes. Let me give you just a few ideas, and I'm speaking from experience. I'm speaking from experience. Here's what it's going to take. Number one, you got to be a risk taker. You got to take a risk. You got to take a risk. You got to take a risk. We're talking about out of your comfort zone. You got to take a risk. Oh, it's safe to shake hands with somebody of a different color here because you're not going to ride back home to them. They're not going to call you. You know, this is cool. This is comfortable. This is promise keeping. But to take a risk means that you've got to do something daring. Daring. Something that will take you outside of your
comfort zone. You see, to cross colors, to walk in somebody else's shoes, I'm telling you, there's a risk involved. I mean, it's like a lobster. You know, I'm told that lobsters, they're born with shells, and they like these shells, and they live in these shells a long time. But as the lobster grows and matures, in time, that lobster outgrows its shell. Now, that lobster can easily say, like some of you are, no, I know I've outgrown this shell, but I like this shell. I was born with this shell. Everybody I know has a shell like this. I mean, where I live, we all have the same kind of shell. And you're asking me to cross colors, and you're asking me to change shells, and I can't do that. But if that lobster does not change shells, that shell becomes its coffin. Listen. In between changing shells, that lobster is extremely vulnerable. Vulnerable to the sea currents, vulnerable to sea creatures. And I can imagine some lobster saying, can you give me a videotape where you can guarantee me that if I cross colors, if I reach out for the next 25 years, I won't be misunderstood, I won't be heard, this will be successful, nobody will marry my daughter. Can you guarantee me all of those things? If you can put that in writing, God, I will change colors. But until then, I'm going to stay in the shell I was born with. Case closed. You know, in California several years ago, a couple of men designed some clothes called Cross Colors. The reason why they designed these clothes is because over there in California, there are places where you wear the wrong colors and you'll get shot just for wearing the wrong color. You'll get killed. So they designed some clothes called Cross Colors. The idea is to wear clothes without prejudice. And that's what God is stopping at your door to say to you today, men. It's time to bust the wall and cross colors. It's time to change shells. But it requires risk. It requires risk. It requires you becoming a risk taker. And I'm not going to be foolish and naive to think that everybody here is going to do that. It's like this high school principal invited these recruiters from the military to speak to his high school graduating seniors. He gave that guy from the Air Force 15 minutes. He gave the guy from the Army 15 minutes. And then he gave the recruiter from the Marines 15 minutes. Sure enough, the guy from the Air Force gets up and he takes more time than he's allotted. The guy from the Army is determined not to be outdone. He takes more time. By the time the guy from the Marines gets up, he only has 3 minutes. He looks at the crowd, about 250 so students. He looks at them. He looks from eyeball to eyeball. Takes about 60, 90 seconds without saying anything. He's got their attention. And then he steps up to the mic and he says, listen. As I look at this crowd, there's only about 2 or 3 of you to have what it takes to be a Marine. Anybody interested, see me afterwards. That's what the Holy Spirit is saying to you. That if you love God enough, if you want to know why you were born, if you want to make your life count, if you want to bust the wall, take a risk. It's daring. There's risk involved.
The second thing, if you're going to take a risk, you need to understand that when you take this risk, you got to be reckless. You got to live on the dangerous side of life. You got to be reckless. And I'm talking about something down deep inside. Reckless. You got to go and say and do what no one else has done. God began to do that in my life. And God began to show me, Haman, you got to bust the wall. Quit building walls. You got to bust the wall. God knew that I wasn't ready, and so God has a way of making you reckless. When you kind of say, God, I'll do anything, God says, okay. 13 years ago,
started a church in Detroit. The goal, the plan was to build a black middle-class church. That was in our vision statement, our mission statement. We wanted everybody to know that we were going to be a black middle-class church. The up-and-outers reaching the down-and-outers. I looked and seen how there are a lot of folks who had received education and they were doing well and they weren't reaching back, and so we established this black middle-class church, which was cool and great. I was all excited and fired up about it. Till after 5 years of growing as a church, all of a sudden God threw me a curve because white people started visiting. We didn't invite them, but they started visiting. Which was cool, you know, as long as you kind of drive by and drive through. But then after that, they started joining. Totally blew my thing. You know what I mean? It kind of changed the complexion of my church. And I began to have to, God forced me to deal with the racism and the prejudice inside me. Because they start asking questions like, will there be any songs that we relate to? Will you have any programs for my children? I was used to asking those questions. I mean, these white folks just messed up my thing. My children start asking questions like, Dad, suppose we marry one. What? Look at the color of your skin. What planet are you living on? I didn't have to face those issues until white folks moved into my hood and God forced me to cross colors. We're no longer a black middle class church. So like again, I remember this one time we was on Colorado, was in this guy's house, great big place, mansion, billionaire. He took a bunch of us in his room that he said was dedicated to courage. A bunch of us preachers stand around the pool and he says, listen, this pool is dedicated to courage. He says, I built my company on courage. Gotta be reckless. It's built on courage. He says, listen, look closely in that pool. It was an Olympic-sized pool. Inside the pool was a bunch of alligators. He says, listen, this pool is dedicated to celebrate courage. He says, I'm a billionaire. I'll give anybody anything they want. If they jump in this pool, make it across, I'll give you anything you want. We all stood around that pool like the disciples and said, not I. Just as we turned to leave, this billionaire says, just as I thought, no courage in America. No more courage. Nobody with backbone. Just as we turned to leave, we hear this splash. I look back, and there was this youth pastor in the pool, swimming with all the... getting it. He was struggling. We were cheering him on. The alligators are snapping, trying to get him. They miss him. He gets out. We pull him out. He survived. And this billionaire says, man, I want you to know that I'm a man of my word. I'm a man of integrity. I'm a promise keeper. I said that I would give you whatever you want. You made it across. Tell me, son, what is it that you want? I'll give you anything you want. We pull this guy out. He says, come on, tell me what you want. The guy says, all I want is enough. Who pushed me? The truth is, man, the truth is, some of you will never bust a wall until God pushes you. God says, listen, I want you to be reckless. I want you to live on the dangerous side. And then the third and last thing is that if you're going to bust a wall, not only do you need to be a risk taker, not only do you need to have a sense of being reckless, living on the dangerous side, you must be relentless. It requires you and I pursuing, knocking away, chipping away, blasting at this wall until it comes down. It's not going to come down just because you pray about it. It requires a spirit, an attitude of, I am relentless. I'm not giving up until that wall between my wife and I come down. I'm not giving up until that wall between me and my children come down. I'm not giving up until that wall between me and black folks or Asian folks. God, I'm not going to give up until it's down. It requires a spirit of being relentless. I've been working at this thing a long time. Let me see if I can illustrate it this way. A friend of mine was working on his advanced degree at Harvard. He decided that he would try to look for an easy class. He looked in the catalog and he sees this class. It was listed in the catalog as Drown Proofing 101. He says, this has got to be easy class. He's a pretty good swimmer, decent swimmer. So he shows up the first day of class. The coach, the professor of the class, says, listen, I've been teaching this class for 25 years. No one's ever failed. When you finish this class, when you complete this class, I guarantee you, you will be drown-proof. No matter whatever body of water you find yourself in, you'll know how to survive. The class is called Drown-Proofing 101. He says, now to pass this class is pretty simple. It's pretty easy. He says, all you have to do to pass this class, all you have to do in order to be drown-proof is, number one, swim 3 lengths of this Olympic-sized pool underwater, 1 breath. At the end of the third length, at the end of the third lap, you pick up the diving brick, you get out, and you're finished. He says, that's all you have to do. 3 lengths, underwater, 1 breath, pick up the diving brick, you pass the class, and I guarantee you, you'll be drown-proof. He says, but the key, though, the secret is, you got to know what to do when you reach your quitting point. Huh? He says, yes, listen. Everybody in this class, just like everyone in this arena, has a quitting point. When it comes to busting a wall, listen, brothers, you will reach your quitting point. But the professor said to them, like I'm saying to you, you got to know what to do when you reach your quitting point. He says, listen, when you reach your quitting point, all you have to do is take one more stroke. Say that. One more stroke. He says, let me explain what I mean. He says, you will know that you've reached your first quitting point because your nose will begin to burn. He says, even though your nose is burning, you'll want to quit. He says, but even though it's burning, you can always take one more stroke. He says, then after a while, your eyes will join your nose. So you got your nose and your eyes singing this duet. Quit. He says, even though you've reached your second quitting point, you don't have to quit. Because even when you reach that point, all you have to do is take one more stroke. He says, then your lungs will burn. He says, man, you got a trio going now. Your nose says quit. Your eyes says quit. Your lungs says quit. He says, but listen, I'm telling you, even though you've reached another quitting point, all you have to do is take one more stroke. He says, and then after a while, your brain will quit, kick in. And your brain will say, fool, you better quit. He says, well, listen, I'm here to tell you. I'm telling you, even though your brain, your nose, your eyes, your throat, your lungs, everything is saying quit. He says, even when you reach that quitting point, you always still will have the energy to take one more stroke. He said, don't think about how long you've been swimming, how long you've been trying to bust down this wall. Don't think about how deep the water is or how thick the wall is. Don't think about how far we have to go. There ought to be only one thing in your brain, in your bosom. God, give me the strength. Give me the grace. Give me the courage. Give me the power to always take one more stroke. Brothers, when you get out there trying to bust down that wall, you've got to be relentless. Don't quit. God will give you what it takes to always take what? One more stroke. As I accepted this call on God's life, God's call on my life to be a wall buster, He began to show me that it wasn't going to be easy. That I had to take some risks. It required that I would be reckless. It required that I would have down deep inside character, the character that I would be relentless. I'm not giving up on this. I'm not giving up on this. And God began to show me that, hey man, you've got to take the initiative. You've got to take the initiative. Don't wait for the White House. Don't wait for the mayor. Don't wait for someone else. You take the initiative. Haman, you must become sensitive. You've been hurt. You've been wounded. You've been let down. You've been angry. You've been bitter. You must become sensitive. Take the initiative. You must become sensitive. You must, Haman, have a biblical response. You must become biblically responsive. God has shown me. I don't care what people have done to me. I don't care what they say. I cannot respond in a sinful way. Because, you know, there's three brands of racism. There's active racism, where you just hate white folks because they're white. Or you hate black folks because they're black. That's active racism. But then there's passive racism. When you listen to those jokes, or you know about things that people say or do in your home, on your job, in the church, in the community, and you don't speak up, and you don't say anything, you kind of shake your head. But for you not to say something, that's passive racism. And then the third brand is that reactive racism. Since you hate me, I hate you. Since you mistreat me, I'm going to mistreat you. All three brands is poisonous. All three brands come from the pit. All three brands make up that wall that must come down. Now for some of you, it's tragic, but you'll leave here with either a spirit of apathy, it's not my problem, or some of us, some of my brothers, we've been angry and mad for a long time, and we can leave here with apathy or hostility. It's sort of like my son when he was 3 years old. My wife and I carelessly left this razor-sharp butcher's knife on the kitchen table. He wanders into the kitchen, climbs up on the chair, grabs his razor-sharp knife. He's holding it in his hands, the blade. He thinks it's a toy. My wife and I are sitting in the living room. He comes waddling in the living room. He's got this razor-sharp butcher's knife in his hand. My heart almost stops. I drop to my knees. I look at him. I said, Hey, man, give Dad the knife. My son looks at me with this big smile on his face, 3-year-old's big, fat, pudgy legs, big, fat, pudgy fingers, squeezing his razor-sharp butcher's knife. He looks at me and says, no, mine. I plead with him. I get down on his level. I say, come on, Haman, give Dad the knife. He says, no, mine. I got to figure out what to do. I'm his parent, I'm his dad, I love him. I realize that he has no idea what he has in his hand. I realize that if I take another step toward him, he'll probably run from me, because children, when they grab hold of something, they want to hold on to it, and they won't come to meetings where you talk about these kind of issues. They'll run from that. And so I said, I can't step toward him because he'll run and probably fall and plunge himself to death. And the thought runs through my mind, maybe if I grab the knife by the handle, even though he's holding the blade in his hand, if I snatch the knife out of his hand, I may slice his fingers, but I would rather he lose his fingers than his life. I'm perplexed. I'm hurting because I don't want my son to play with that knife. I gotta believe that that's the heart of God. God is saying, church in America, partiality, racism, is a knife that you gotta let go. It makes no difference whether it's active, passive, or reactive. It's poisonous. It'll destroy the body. It gives God a bad reputation. God is asking us as men, he's pleading, he's saying, please let go of the knife. When you let go of the knife, now you're ready to bust the wall. And I want you to know, those of you that will pray in a few minutes, you'll make a commitment to be a wall buster. I want you to know it will require you taking a risk. You got to be reckless. You got to be relentless. But let me read this to you and I'm going to shut up. Every time I think about God's call on my life to be a wall buster, and I get discouraged or misunderstood, I read this. This was written by an African pastor. And it just fires me up. Let me read it to you. I've got a copy of it over at the booth. Let me read it to you. Listen what he says. It's called A Christian's Commitment. I am part of the fellowship of the unashamed. I have Holy Spirit power. The die has been cast. I have stepped over the line. The decision has been made. I am a disciple of his. I won't look back, let up, slow down, back away, or be still. My past is redeemed. My present makes sense. My future is secure. I'm finished and done with low living, small walking, small planning, smooth moves, colors, dreams, faint visions, mundane talking, and dwarf goals. I no longer need preeminence, prosperity, position, products, or popularity. I don't have to be right, first, tops, recognized, praised, regarded, or rewarded. I now live by faith, lean on His presence, walk by patience, lifted by prayer. My face is set, my gate is fast, my goal is heaven, my road is long, my way is rough, my companions few, my God reliable, my mission clear. I cannot be bought, compromised, detoured, lured away, turned back, deluded, or delayed. I will not flinch in the face of sacrifice, hesitate in the presence of the adversary, negotiate at the table of the enemy, ponder at the pool of popularity, or meander in the maze of mediocrity. I like this part. I won't give up, shut up, let up, until I've stayed up, stored up, prayed up, paid up, preached up for the cause of Christ. Gotta read that one more time. I won't give up, shut up, let up, until I've stayed up, stored up, prayed up, paid up, and preached up for the cause of Christ. I am a disciple of Jesus. I must go to the cross and work until He stops me. When He comes for His own, He'll have no problem recognizing me, because my banner will be clear. Brothers, it's time to bust the wall. Pastor Raleigh, come and help us. It's time, brothers, to bust the wall. Look at your neighbor and say, it's time to bust the wall.